In this part of Focus, we'll be talking about a trend in higher education that people at colleges and universities had been aware of for a long time, but hadn't understood very well. And that is that, roughly speaking, about half of the students who go to college intending to study science, math, and engineering, about half of them switch before they graduate. They go into something else. Not only do they go into some other science, they go out of the sciences completely. And as I say, it was something that people in colleges and universities knew happened, but no one really quite understood why it had happened. So this morning, in this part of Focus 580, we'll be talking with a scholar. She is a sociologist who set out to try to get a better understanding of why it is that undergraduates leave the sciences. Her name is Elaine Seymour. She's director of ethnography and evaluation research in the Bureau of Sociological Research at University of Colorado at Boulder. And a number of years ago, she and a colleague undertook a study and involved several universities and talking with literally hundreds of students about their experiences. It did end up being published as a book-length treatment, which is titled Talking About Leaving, Why Undergraduates Leave the Sciences. It's published by the Westview Press, so it is available if you want to look at it in detail. We'll try and hit some of the high points here this morning in this part of Focus 580, and of course, would be happy to take questions from people who are listening. All we ask of callers is that people are brief so that we can keep the program moving along, but of course, anybody is interested who is interested is welcome to call 333-9455 and also toll-free 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers. Dr. Seymour is here visiting the campus as part of a lecture series, a spring lecture series that is sponsored by the University of Illinois Office of Women in Engineering. And I know one of the things she's particularly interested in is why it is that young women end up leaving the sciences. And one of the things that we know is that this tendency of undergraduates to start in sciences, math, engineering, and leave is more pronounced with women and minority students. So having said all that, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Good morning to everyone.
And I guess, as I understand, it is the case that for a long time, people at colleges and universities knew this was happening. Mm-hmm. And that the big question, and that question that interested you, is why? Why was it happening?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think they knew and they didn't know. Mm-hmm. I think certain people knew. The National Science Foundation, many of the foundations like Sloan, ExxonMobil and so on, who are very concerned about the retention and recruitment and retention of students into the sciences, both undergraduate and graduate, that they have known for a long time. And there have been several commissions to study this, but they had not come to any conclusion by the early 90s, which is when we began to think about doing this work. So some people knew, a lot of people didn't. And indeed, it's still news to a lot of people because departments don't necessarily keep very good records of students' comings and goings. Mm. We find often that they don't know.
Well, I think also that if people will think back to their own experience in college or that of their children or people that they know, they will understand that there is a lot of switching that takes place. There are a lot of people who go to college intending to study one thing and then for a variety of reasons change their minds and study something else. But if you look, though, at the rates of switching, it is for people who are in science, math, and engineering, it is much more pronounced than people who go intending to study history.
Yes.
Or anthropology. And that is also much more the case that someone, say, who starts out deciding they want to study physics changes and goes into history. It's much less likely that someone starts out saying, I want to be a historian, and then 2 years in decides they want to be a physicist. It doesn't happen like that.
No. It's very curious, really, because, as you say, there's a tradition in the liberal arts and humanities of encouraging young people to try things, particularly things that were not available to them in high school. And so it's not uncommon and it's not discouraged for people to move from political science to international relations and so on. But curiously, despite that tradition, the switching is less. It's around a third. And English literature, which must be the despair of parents because they wonder what on earth their kids are going to do if they major in English literature, is the most stable major on campus. Almost nobody moves. Mm-hmm. So The sciences and mathematics and engineering run nationally between 40 and 60% switching rate. It's least in engineering, curiously. We think that's because engineering goes through quite a selection process before young people actually commit to it. That may explain it. We're not entirely sure why.
Let's dismiss something right up front that I'm sure, again, when we get into this conversation, some people will think, well, they would say, well, the explanation here is simple. What happens is that students, they have ambitions, they have expectations, they get to university, and they find that they're not capable of doing the work. Mm-hmm. When you take a look at the students and you compare those who switched and those who didn't, on all the measures that you could think of that would give some indication of what the potential of the students are, things like test scores and grade point average and everything, you find, in fact, that they're all the same.
Yes.
So you cannot say, well, it's just because the students can't handle the work.
Yes.
That's not the reason.
Yeah. We tried to control for this rather carefully in our study by only selecting students who had a minimum SAT mathematics score or equivalent of 650 or above. So below that level, certainly there will be some flunking out going on, and I can't comment on that. But our concern was with able students who leave. And we had talked to faculty on our own campus at CU, and their advice was that if we took 650 SAT math as a marker, then above that line we should be interviewing students who, on the face of it, should be able to manage perfectly well and who would show an appropriate level of preparation. To our surprise, when we sampled the students, as you indicate, we sampled a more or less even number of people who left or who had recently left and people who stayed, we found no difference between them at all in the issue of prior preparation. Quite a number of them, over 40% of them, both the switchers and the non-switchers, said they had difficulties of making an adjustment when they came to university because the preparation they'd had in high school hadn't served them well enough. And some of those we interviewed as seniors who were staying bemoaned this considerably. But there was no distinction between them. And this was one of the biggest surprises of the study, that on many markers there really wasn't anything to choose between those who left and those who stayed. We found exactly the same problems. We found 23 different factors which arose out of the interviews, which contributed to switching, and only four of those were suggested by us. The rest arose precisely from the interviews themselves. They were generated by the interviews, and the same issues were therefore for both sets of students.
That's what's fascinating about this, and we can get in and talk about some of these things in greater detail. But overall, if you look at the students who switched out, mm-hmm. and you ask them about their experiences, and they tell you about their frustrations and their doubts and their difficulties, and then you ask the students who stayed, and they tell you about their frustrations and their doubts and their difficulties, mm-hmm. It's virtually the same.
Yes.
So obviously what's going on, there must be something that's really much more subtle and difficult to determine, because everyone will tell you they have some doubts about their
yes.
ability, and they have some, you know, maybe they got into it and they say, well, it wasn't what I thought it was going to be, or they say, well, you know, the fact of the matter is that some of these teachers I have, they're just not very good teachers. Mm-hmm. And they will tell you things like that. But mm-hmm. what you find is that they all will tell you the same thing, those
yeah.
who stayed and those who left.
Yeah. Yeah. Numerically, the difference between them is that the average number of reported difficulties that the switchers and the non-switchers have, the same difficulties, is higher for the switchers. And, I mean, this doesn't help a lot, but it helps a little to know it was about 8.5 problems for the switchers and about 5 or 6 problems for the non-switchers. Again, the same. So the switchers had reported more of the same problems, but that really doesn't quite cut it. There are some things which explain why people hung in. One very important one was the intervention of faculty. There were very, very many fork-in-the-road stories. The student would tell us something like, I was in despair, I was having this or that difficulty, things were piling up, I was getting into a mess, I didn't know where to turn, and I happened to meet Professor so-and-so in the corridor. And I said, can I talk to you? Or he or she said, what's the matter? You're looking depressed. Come talk to me. And those interventions were actually very critical. They often made the difference between somebody throwing in the towel and not. We heard dozens and dozens and dozens of those stories. The attitudes of parents also mattered enormously, because kids would go home for the vacation, Christmas or whatever, and talk to their mum and dad. And how the parents handled those vents really made a big difference. And there was a particular difference for women there, that for sons, fathers and mothers tended to say, now you've just got to stiffen your spine and toughen this out and just put up with it and keep going. For daughters, they were somewhat more likely to say, we love you, dear. We don't want to see you suffering. If you want to go into political science, we won't stop you. Mm-hmm. So that was a critical intervention. In fact, some of the women said, that's not what I wanted my mother to say. I wanted to say, just to let me vent, just to let me say what was on my mind, but be encouraging and supporting. I didn't actually want to say it's okay to leave.
Our guest in this part of Focus, let me reintroduce, is Elaine Seymour. She is a sociologist by training. She works in the Bureau of Sociological Research at University of Colorado Boulder and has been there since 1989. And we're talking about a study that she and a colleague were involved in, looking at why it is that undergraduates, so many undergraduates who go to college intending to major in either science, math, or engineering, why so many of them leave, not leave college, but switch to other majors. If you're interested, by the way, again, reading about this, it's explored in great detail in the book, Talking About Leaving, Why Undergraduates Leave the Sciences. The Westview Press is the publisher. I'm sure you can find it in the bookstore or in the library. And of course, questions are welcome here on the show. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. I wondered, to what extent the highly competitive nature about some of these programs is a factor. And I think that some students complain about that. They think that maybe it's a little bit unreasonable, and in fact complain that there is, in the minds of some professors, this idea that right at the beginning you put the screws to the students just as much as you possibly can, because you actually want to wash some people out, that there's this, it almost amounts to hazing in the beginning. And that there are some students who are just really who may indeed be perfectly able to do the work. They're smart. That's not the issue. But something about this initial business just turns them really off. And they say, you know, I don't like that kind of atmosphere. I don't like that kind of attitude. I'm going to go and study something else.
Mm-hmm. This is a problem. I think it's a felt moral imperative by faculty in academe. It's not just in the sciences, but it's particularly in the hard sciences and engineering, that there are some diamonds out there, and the job of the faculty is to find them, that not everybody can do science. And so there, across the country, you find that the wastage rate is consistently round about the third to a quarter in the first class or so. And that proportion stays the same regardless of the quality of the students they're getting in. It doesn't matter whether it's Stanford, Harvard, or your local state university. The proportion is the same because the imperative is the same. So the kids call it the weed out classes, and that's, there is quite a bit of reality to this. The gist of weed out is that you teach too much, you teach it too fast. It's like, as one kid said to me, drinking from a fire hose. Okay. There's no time to absorb the material. And there is a lot of competition. There's curve grading, which encourages competition between students, so they never know what the quality of their work is by the grade they've got. Students tend to come in with fairly high confidence, particularly women, and a number of studies before ours had shown that the confidence of able women coming into the sciences evaporates very quickly, although they didn't quite understand why. It also happens for young men too. They've been stars in their high school, and they suddenly experience this gap between the often very interesting and interactive kind of teaching and learning that they experienced at high school, and the good grades also that they got, and the kind of pushing students away that is part of the teaching style of universities. And I think the pushing away is to do with toughening people up, a tradition of expecting students to rise to the challenge, to prove themselves, to show that they are morally worth the teacher's time. And by junior year, those who survive have a very different experience of faculty. It's a much more interactive and nurturing environment by that stage. So they're looking for people who can stand up to them and stand up to this treatment. And it vitally affects the way the teaching is done by lecturing, very large lecture classes that may or may not be well supported by recitations, TAs who are often not trained at all and have limited notions of how to work with the small group to which they're entrusted. And that experience is very problematic for young men and for young women, but for different reasons. For young men, the weeding out certainly works. They understand the embedded messages in it that you either rise the challenge or you're out of here. Young women have no clue what it means, but they know that it's an unpleasant experience and they can't understand why they can't get the teacher to take any notice of them because they've been used to a much more interactive Socratic dialogue with their teachers. And they start to wonder if they're wanted, if they belong. So it has gender effects that are entirely unintended by the faculty.
Mm-hmm. I have some callers here, and I will get right to them. Just very quickly, I would like to raise this question. The concern here about this high rate of switching is that we may be losing people who would turn out to be very good scientists and,
yes,
and would go on and make important contributions to all of those fields. We do know that some switching is probably normal and that that's
yes,
always going to happen. So I guess the question would be, what would be an appropriate level of switching, a level that would really – that would descend below the level of concern where you'd say, well, that's just kind of normal?
Yeah. I don't know. I think that if you took the students at this level of ability, all of those students could survive this experience and thrive. So I would be concerned about any level of switching that was losing substantial numbers of students with these high entry level performance scores. Traditionally, the science and engineering departments have got the cream of the high schools. There's no question that for years they've always had the students of the very highest quality. That doesn't mean to say high quality students don't go into other things too, but they've had the higher proportions. So I think that there should be concern wherever they're losing large numbers of high quality students.
We have several callers here. Let's start right in. And the first is in Champaign and on line one. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
I'm very interested in your topic. I was an undergrad in science, and I actually survived that and did some graduate work and then ended up leaving after that for, I wonder if the same reasons other people leave. But I'm curious, one thing that I've thought about over the years is that the love of science that kind of can bring somebody into a major, I wonder if that ends up being kind of different than the practice of science. You know, when you can go in and you enjoy reading and doing the work, but when it comes down to actually being a scientist, a lot of that is lost in looking for grants and spending a lot of time in the library and doing kind of mundane statistical type research that isn't necessarily what got you into it in the first place. And I wonder if that accounts for some of the switching. That's something that I've found. And another question that I have, and I'll just hang up and listen, is I wonder if people who start off at smaller colleges, maybe in a community college, end up doing a little better, because I went all the way through at a very large university, ended up later teaching a little bit at a community college and found the classes to seem much smaller and friendlier. And I'm curious as to if change, if starting off in a community college increases success at all.
Let me
hang up and listen.
All right, well, thanks for the call.
Hello, good morning to you. Thank you for your questions. Let me answer the last question first. Yes, the answer is yes. Very often people who start in community college and also young people who start in liberal arts colleges and in particular for young women in all women's colleges report much more nurturing and productive learning experiences than people in universities. However, having said that, we did our study in institutions of seven different kinds, and they included one small private university and a liberal arts college, and we found, although the trend was less pronounced, it was still there. So, of course, faculty are human beings who have been trained in this system themselves. They're survivors of it. They are. They have come through this baptism of fire, and they will take their teaching habits and their attitudes with them wherever they happen to go. But you're right that I would certainly advise any young person, if they can, to do some of their early classes in the community college, because they will very often get a much more nursive and interactive, above all, experience. Now, let me go back to the original questions, and David's going to have to remind me. Help me out, David.
Well, okay, it sounded to me like she was asking this question, that, you know, when you're in high school and you're studying science and you're interested in it, you're pretty much in it for the love of the subject. When you get to university level, it's going to be very different, and it could just be that some students would get into it and they would see the reality of it as a discipline that you would study on the college level. Maybe you just have to spend a lot of time in lab doing stuff you're not interested in. There is, of course, the fact that you have to be always chasing grant money. Graduate students, they ended up doing a lot of the really routine and maybe not very interesting work, and that maybe students would get into that, and the reality of science as a university undergraduate just wasn't what they thought it was, or didn't appeal to them in the same way that studying it as a high schooler did.
Yeah. Well, there's two different levels to this. Now, this study is about undergraduates, so I'll answer that one first. One of the saddest things that we discovered is that students come in from high school very often very fired up about science, very, very interested in it. And one of the saddest things about the weed-out process of the early classes is that it can destroy that interest. Kids who are very turned on become very turned off, and they're very disappointed. They thought that they were going to have a wonderful experience with professors with very interesting research, and it's partly why they came to some of the schools that we interviewed in, and they're very, very sad and disappointed. On the other side of this, I asked all the students, are there any things that are intrinsically boring? Is there anything that's about learning the basics of science that is just hard and you have to get through it? And the universal answer was no. Nothing is inherently boring. Everything can be taught in an interesting way. And to back this up, they gave me lots of stories of classes they had been in. Perhaps they'd taken the same class twice with Professor X, and they hadn't done very well. And the next time it came around, it was Professor Y. And they told me about the difference between the two ways of teaching the same material. Or they had stories from their roommates who told the same sort of things. And of course there is a kind of scuttlebutt around the university about which teacher you should go to and why. And very often it's in terms of who is more interesting than whom. Now, you talk also about your graduate school experiences. We're doing a study of undergraduate research and its value. This is a quite different study. It's still ongoing. And one of the things that we discover there is that for some students, learning what research is like is a very important discovery about self. Research can be tedious, it's long-winded, it takes time, things go wrong all the time, and some proportion of young people who experience research with faculty decide that it's not for them, and that's probably a very important discovery. But I don't think that the undergraduates that we're talking about, largely in the first couple of years, ever got far enough to discover anything about real science. They were stuck in large classes, in lectures, learning very passively. So they weren't exposed to real science in any sense.
We're at our midpoint here, and we have other callers. I promise I will get right to them, but for the benefit of anyone who might have tuned in the last 5 or 10 minutes, I'd like to reintroduce our guest, Dr. Elaine Seymour. She's Director of Ethnography and Evaluation Research in the Bureau of Sociological Research at University Colorado Boulder. She's been there since 1989. And we're talking about some of the research that she was involved in, looking at why undergraduate college students leave the sciences. The trend that we have been talking about is something around half of the students who go to college intending to major in science, math, or engineering, and it's a little bit different for each of the disciplines, but on average, about half of them switch to other majors before they graduate, and it's not the case that people switch from chemistry to physics, they switch from chemistry to anthropology or to history. They go out of the sciences completely. And it's something, it's a trend that's even more pronounced if you look at women and minority students. Elaine Seymour has co-authored a book-length treatment of this along with Nancy Hewitt. It's titled Talking About Leaving, Why Undergraduates Leave the Sciences. So it's out there. It's published by Westview, if you would like to look at it. She's here visiting the campus as part of the spring lecture series sponsored by U of I's Office of Women in Engineering. We will go back here to the phones, and next we'll go to another Champaign caller. This is line two. Hello.
Hi, very interesting topic. I have two comment-style questions. The first, without being too negative, here at the University of Illinois, which is a very large school and one of the premier schools in Illinois, there's some interesting political pressures that I think add to the weed out during the first 2 years. I had friends who were in engineering, and their first 2 years was totally devoted to tedium. They had no opportunity to experience critical thinking or exploration. You have someone who's going to be a chemical engineer. They, of course, have to take the math sequence, which is 5 hours a semester, but they're also required to take physics, electrical engineering, chemistry, and a wide variety of subjects that are totally determined. In fact, my friend had no ability to choose a class until almost his senior year. And I think there's political reasons for that, in that science programs want to keep enrollment high in other science programs. But I think it also adds to the weed-out factor, that people come to college to learn and instead find out they're kind of tracked like a train and they have to stay on that track. Is that something people talked about in the study?
Well, remember I was talking to undergraduates,
mm-hmm.
and so they feel the effects of things, but they don't always know the causes. Mm-hmm. So they can tell you stories about how it feels and how it was, but they don't always know why. But let me say this, that since we did this study, the book was published in 97, so this is a little while back, and one of the pleasures of our lives since this time has been to work with faculty all over the country who are seeking to improve the learning experience of undergraduates. And one of the things that I notice with considerable pleasure in engineering is schools where there's a major attempt to bring a sense of what engineering is about right into the freshman year, for instance, by introducing early design classes. And I think that is very important. Similar things happen, for instance, in nursing, where I as a medical sociologist, I had a lot of experience before. The same thing. The more you can help kids understand what they're getting into, to help them decide whether there's a fit with who they are and what they like, rather than bombarding them with a very heavy dose only of the theoretical work, which they have to do, but to give them a feeling that, yes, I belong here. And I say this because looking at what allowed people to persist, I see that the motivation, and we looked at a number of them, the motivation that held them better than anything else was an abiding interest in the subject, in the discipline. And if you can sustain that through what are very tough majors, then you will hold the students, even though the work is intrinsically hard. If they enjoy it, they know it's interesting, they enjoy it, and if they've got a sense of where it's taking them, particularly in engineering, that to know what engineering is and is not, this is a very powerful thing that will sustain them.
Mm, okay. And then part of the weed-out process I noticed, and my undergrad was a while back, but say in a field like computer science, frequently the instructors are looking for their future grad students. I remember taking a 20-question test and only being able to answer three of the questions, but still getting a B, which is very disconcerting mm-hmm. because they are looking for future grad students mm-hmm. who can answer the whole test. But in the case of my daughter, who's a freshman at the U of I, I think for young women at a university the size of the University of Illinois, there unfortunately is not the peer support network when you're, say, in first semester calculus for young women that there perhaps is for young men, where it's much easier for a young man to, say, ask the other young men in class or in their dormitory, hey, are you taking calculus? Can you help me with this problem? Because I found my daughter, while she was capable of doing the homework and could figure it out on her own at home, there was really no one she could turn to mm-hmm. in the classroom or in her setting, you know, because most of the young women that she was associating with were in the fine and applied arts. So I wonder about that as far as the dropout rate for young women, or not dropout, excuse me, the switch rate. So thank you for your time, and I'll listen.
Thank you. Yes, you raise a very, very important issue. And for any group that is in a numeric minority, you put your finger on a difficulty. Young women, if we talk about them specifically, have two very powerful needs. One of them is for interaction. I've already mentioned that. To learn interactively is something that they have brought with them from high school, and they can't understand why they can't seem to evoke an interactive response from faculty. That's one issue. The other is the issue of interpretation. Kids coming from high school at this level of ability have been used to high grades. The young women in particular are a bit like the cart horse in Animal Farm. Their response to every difficulty is to say, I will work harder. And they do have a tendency to work extremely hard. So they're very puzzled. They can't understand, particularly where curve grading is used, why their grades seem to be slumping. And what they need is somebody to say to them, and it could be a senior woman in their dorm, it could be a member of the faculty, it could be a TA. They need somebody to say to them, look, a B in Calculus 2 is a very good grade. You may have got A's in high school, but a B or a C here is pretty normal, and you are doing just great, hang in. They need somebody to say that. The worst thing that can happen is, coming from high school, kids can assign the grade as part of their identity. So if I get a B, I am a B. If I get an A, I am an A. And there is an unfortunate tendency, particularly in high schools where they didn't have to work hard if they had a very good facility with math, to assume that they were worth A's. So what does it mean when they're getting C pluses? Does it suddenly mean they're less worthwhile as human beings? And if somebody will do that interpretive work and say, look, this is normal, tough it out. Grades here are a bit like weather. It snows, it rains, the sun comes out. You can't be always sure what you'll get, but it's not you. You just keep working and you are doing fine. It sounds like a small matter, but it's not. It's huge. And as you say, if you're isolated and don't have someone to explain this to you, then you can leave a major, as women do at my own university, with higher average performance scores than the men who stay.
Another caller here. This is someone on a cell phone, and it's line one. Hello.
Hi. Interestingly enough, as soon as you started talking, I called because I'm a professor. I'm now a retired professor, so I immediately had an opinion, which I often do. And luckily, my cell phone is connected, so I had to listen to what he's been saying and the callers. And I've changed my mind completely. First, I want to say I agree with you. Totally in regard to the lack of teaching in the College of Engineering. We really don't do that. I know two individuals who became head of the undergraduate program, their department, because they couldn't stand teaching anymore. That's sort of a weird career move. But the reason they got tired of teaching is they taught the same courses over and over and over again. In my 30 years, I only taught five courses, five different subjects. Competitive, and you get tired of the same questions, and you get less friendly towards the students, let's say. The other thing I wanted to mention, and this is one of your previous callers said, is the fact that many students, when they come into engineering, have to start with their basic core technical courses. And those courses are often not taught by the department in which they are in. In other words, if you're in biology, you would have to take a course in the math department or a physics course or a chemistry course. And those courses are taught by specialists in those fields. And so the student who comes in and wants to study subject A is learning subject B, C, and D, taught by people who don't try to make their subject relevant to the major of the student. So the student says, I came here to study something, and instead I'm taking this math course, and I don't know what that has to do with my subject. I won't find that out until I'm a junior. And by that time, I've lost interest because I've been studying things that don't interest me. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a major problem that we have. And finally, as another caller said, we're a research-oriented university at the University of Illinois, and teaching is something we have to do. There are some of us who actually enjoy it, but I know that if you speak to most professors, they'll tell you that they are not educators. They are scientists or they are engineers. And because of that, they don't view their students as anything but sort of a receptacle to receive the knowledge that the professor has. And so there is that lack of empathy. Anyway, that's been my experience in 30 years at the University of Illinois, and I think I'm glad I listened to the other callers and to you because it made me think more deeply about what it is that we're failing at. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, you want to respond to any
yes.
of that?
Yes. Thank you very much for your thoughtful response to what I was saying. Application is a huge problem. It's certainly one that's identified by students who are hungry for it. Students, of course, don't always know what's good for them. They can tell you how they're suffering and what they're struggling with, but of course they don't always know how to fix it. But application is one thing they're very clear about. They want to know what the knowledge is for. They want to know how ideas connect, and not just within, let's say, mathematics. They want to know how this connects with their engineering or their physics and so on. So they're really looking for connection, relationship of ideas and application. I also feel a lot of fellow feeling for engineering faculty because other people do that, weed out your students for you, because there you are, as you say, with students in mathematics or physics or whatever the required courses, chemistry, another one, and before you end up with the group of students that you're going to be working with for the last 2 or so years of the engineering degree, other people have decided for you, in a sense, who's going to leave and who's going to stay. And you're quite right that as faculty, we don't know a whole lot about teaching. None of us do. Your colleagues on the other side of the campus, likewise, that we learn on the fly, and that we know how we were taught and we replicate that. And we don't pay any attention particularly to the folks in education who might tell us something about interactive and active pedagogy or constructing a curriculum such that it's digestible and comprehensible to students. So we're kind of self-taught and a bit arrogant about it, and that's, you know, not just scientists. You haven't got a monopoly on this. So I think you make two very good points.
We have about 15 minutes left. We have a number of other callers, and we'll try to get in everybody in the time that remains. Again, our guest is Elaine Seymour. She's a sociologist from the University of Colorado Boulder, where she works in the Bureau of Sociological Research, and we have been talking about an area that she's been interested in for a long time now, and that is why it is that undergraduates leave the sciences, why it is that so many young people go to college intending to major in science, math, or engineering, and that they end up switching to other majors outside of those fields. Questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. The next caller is in Lafayette, line 3. Hello. Is caller there in Lafayette, line 3? Okay, let's go to Urbana, line number 2. Hello.
Yeah, the American Association for the Advancement of Science just reported on how to design a program to keep people in minorities and women in the sciences. But looking at what they found it's basically the kind of stuff that would lead you to think they were good teachers in general, you know, which is kind of funny. But I thought the first caller, I want to repeat what he said, which I didn't think you answered very well, because you were talking about how kids say that absorbing the material is so difficult. It's like drinking from a fire hose, that kind of thing. But he brought up that, and I would substitute for that metaphor, the kids don't have a chance to critically evaluate what they're being presented with, you know? And it's, you know, look at the popularity of stuff like forensic science on TV. What you said in response to that was you want to make the students seem as if they belong, you know, feel as if they belong more. But the science curriculum, it's just completely fraught with you know, learn these facts, never look at how the, or almost never, I can't say never, but almost never look at how the facts were presented to the person who discovered this or that, you know, so that you could kind of critically evaluate how they came to that conclusion and kind of put yourself in their place. That would be the really exciting part of it. And they just, you know, these classes are terrible in that sense. But, and the one last thing that you don't seem to mention or have any kind of appreciation for, from what I've heard so far at least, the kind of emotional investment that's put into the ethnic makeup of science workers, because quite to the contrary of what the myth is, you know, almost anybody can contribute to science. It's very unusual in that way, and that's mainly because experimentation is very it's very tediously methodological, and you know, and you have to go through these very laborious steps, and almost anybody, you know, with some level of integrity could help, and you don't get any sense of that in the sciences. And there's a lot more. You could mention how you don't get paid early on in your career and so on and so on, but I'll let you respond to that and I'll hang up. Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you. There are so many things in what you say. I'm going to have to pick and choose a little bit. One of the things I didn't make as clear as I should, but let me lay it down now, is that of 23 factors which contribute to students leaving the sciences, but which are also a problem for people who stay, the number one factor is the learning experience. And behind that, the loss of interest for the switchers in the sciences, which is very, very sad, I think. And you touch on that, the issue of understanding what science is and is not, how knowledge is constructed, how it's formed, where ideas come from, and the lack of an opportunity to argue and debate and discuss what one reads, what you're learning in lab, to see the connections between the hands-on science and the theoretical science. These are all things that make science alive and exciting for people. And we are not giving that to students, I think, in many, many classrooms. They are learning that science is dull and boring. And yet the people who are teaching them have very rich lives professionally as researchers. And the students are disappointed that they don't often get a flavour of that from the people who teach them in the early classes, they would like to know more about the production of science, the doing of science. And one of the encouraging things I've seen all over the country in the last 10 years, our faculty, who as groups and as individuals, are attending to that. There are workshops everywhere. There's masses of stuff on websites where faculty are fast exchanging ideas about how you make science hands-on, lively, active, above all, interesting, and real, because there's a sort of level of abstraction about early classes which leads students to despair they'll ever get to the real stuff. Seniors, in their stories, often talked about this. They would laugh about it. They said, we know there's the real stuff out there, but we're not quite sure when we're going to get round to it. Mm. So your description of the experience is, I think, very accurate.
We have other callers. Again, we'll try to get in as many as we can in the time that remains. The next person in line is in Champaign and line one. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to hear a little bit more about minority students. You mentioned, I think, earlier that the rate of switching is higher for minority students. Is that right?
I don't exactly know what it is at the moment. The problem is there are very few minority students coming in, and we lose almost as many as we take in. There is a revolving door problem. The NACME, the National Action Council for Engineering Education, keeps a very close tally on our progress with students of colour, and the sad picture is we're not making any. We had very small numbers to choose from in our sampling. I think I managed to talk to 88 students of different races and ethnicities, and that was difficult enough to find. We have spent very large amounts of money as a national community, something like $3 billion, trying to bring students of colour through in the high schools, through into university and up to graduate school level, and we're not making any progress at all. And my thought about that is, in order to address the problem of students of colour being underrepresented in the sciences, and in order to bring more young women into science, we're making some headway there, particularly in the life sciences, mathematics, and some branches of engineering, but in order to bring more through in chemistry and physics, for example, we're going to have to do something seriously about our mode of teaching, because I think what we have tried to do is approach this problem over the last 10 years or so by setting up programs for students of colour and for women, which in fact marginalises the problem. It doesn't help. I think the rising tide lifts all ships, and this is the approach we probably should be taking, and indeed many faculty are taking, that if we can improve our pedagogy and make it more active and interactive, include more group work, include more relevance, make it more interesting, then we will actually increase disproportionately the underrepresented groups in our science and engineering classrooms. I think that's probably the way to go, rather than setting up programs for people who are underrepresented, which is hugely stigmatizing and not working.
Right. Did you find with the few students that you were able to talk to, students from minority groups, did you find differences in reasons that they're leaving, or different factors that would contribute to their staying?
Yes, and it's complicated, but I'd say this, that one of our errors was to treat everyone who was not white as if they had intrinsically something in common. They were often glossed by the term minority students and often were in the past treated as a group. This has been very unfortunate. The reasons why people come and go for each group and the problems for each group are different. So the problems for Native Americans from reservation society versus urban society are different. The problems for urban and non-urban African American students are different. And the Asian students, Asian American students, also have issues which are different. So in order to understand this, it takes a little trouble to look at the picture for each group. For instance, amongst Asian American students, there was the feeling that they had been railroaded very much into the sciences and mathematics because of an almost racist assumption that they are good at this kind of thing. And somewhat it's supported by parents who are concerned that they get good positions in life, but it's also subscribed to by their teachers and the advisors in school. I had one kid who went from the life sciences to history, who was a Korean American, say to me, you know, I've been in a little bamboo cage all my life, and I had to fight with everybody to get to do history. So he was one young person for whom the switch was a highly appropriate move, because it was an act of autonomy and self-determination. But so it's a rather rambling answer, but the problem is you have to look at each group separately to understand the factors here.
Right, okay. Well, thanks for your answer.
All right, thank you. We're coming down to the point here. We have maybe about a minute or a minute and a half. You started to undertake this work in 1990.
1991, I'm forgetting now.
So obviously it takes a while to do it and look at it and to get to the point where it's something that you can actually publish.
Yes.
So, but you've been at this for now more than a decade. Have things, do you think, over that time improved, or are they essentially the same now as they were 14 some years ago when you actually started this work?
They are changed, but I will say it takes a long time to turn an oil tanker around, and we've got an oil tanker here. There's a lot of students, a lot of classes, and a lot of institutions of different type. So it's a big piece. I can't say that any one institution as an institution has managed this. What I do see, and this is very encouraging, we work as evaluators with groups of faculty all over the country who are very much engaged in improving the learning experience of students. And I do see considerable progress. And I do see science faculty teaching each other how to do this and learning from what is known from cognitive science and sharing that knowledge. And I find this extremely encouraging. And I think that what will happen eventually is the people on my side of the campus, the social sciences, the humanities and so on, will eventually be recognizing some of their science colleagues as knowing far more about it than they do and will be coming to them for advice.
All right. Well, I thank you very much for being with us.
It's my pleasure.
I appreciate it. Elaine Seymour from the Bureau of Sociological Research at University of Colorado Boulder. And as I mentioned, if you're interested in exploring in greater detail this study that she was involved in, it has been published as a book. It's titled Talking About Leaving, Why Undergraduates Leave the Sciences. It's published by the Westview Press. Dr. Seymour is visiting here. Her visit is sponsored by the University of Illinois Office of Women in Engineering.